Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and I'm pleased to have as my guest PMH Atwater, her new book, A Manual for Developing Humans. Ms. Atwater has been the author of more than 15 books, many of which have been featured on Temple of Health Radio Show. So if you go to the website, www.plasticos.com, you may be able to hear previous interviews. Welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Well, would you like to tell the listening audience a little bit about how you came to write the book?
That's a story, you know.
I know.
That's a little story. I died three times in 1977 within a three-month period of time. Mm-hmm. In my third near-death experience, I heard a voice, not like a voice, not like an angel, a guardian, a disincarnate, none of that. So strange and so different and so big and so huge and powerful that I called it the voice like none other.
Mm-hmm.
My sense was it was of God. And that voice was very specific. It said that I was to do the research. You know, I was on my way at that time in my life to being a bank manager. I was taking classes at the American Banking Institute. And so suddenly I'm supposed to be a pioneering researcher in a field that few people know that much about or even care about, and that's near-death studies. And mm-hmm. so that's why I became a researcher. And then it said I was to write three specific books. Book number one was not named. I have no way of knowing what book that was. I suspect it was Coming Back to Life, my first major book, but mm-hmm. I don't know. The second one was Future Memory. Mm-hmm. The voice came back for the writing of Future Memory, showed me how to do it. No, it's not a book. It's a labyrinth. Every sentence, every paragraph, every page is part of the math I use to create the labyrinth. It's a real labyrinth. You read through it like you walk through a sight labyrinth. And the purpose of the book is to bring your consciousness up to the next highest level possible for you. The book contains the what's and why's of life, of earth, of creation. Mm-hmm. The third book, A Manual for Developing Humans, was actually the first book I ever wrote. And we're talking the early 80s here, and I sent it out for peer review, as I often do with my work. And every one of the people, you know, came back and said the same thing. They all said, the world isn't ready yet for this. Put it in a box.
Mm-hmm.
So I did. I put it in a very big box. And there it remained for almost 39 years,
mm-hmm.
unopened. And it was the death of my very good friend, Robert Van de Castle. Maybe you and some of your audience remember Bob. He was and is one of the leading researchers in the field of dreams. Mm-hmm. His book, Our Dreaming Mind, is just an incredible piece of work, and it's still out there. And it's still, you know, an incredible, an incredible work. And so Bob died, and I went to his funeral, his memorial, and I was sitting out in front because I tend to be the first one there or nearly the first one there. I'm one of these prompt people. And so I'm sitting out in the car, and suddenly Bob manifested in the seat next to me and looked at me. And he started laughing. He said, I knew you'd be here. And then he disappeared. So I went mm-hmm. in the memorial, and I was seated on the right-hand side, third row in the middle. And I'm, you know, on the dais was an incredible, wonderful picture of Bob. I think one of the best ever taken. And about halfway through the memorial, he came out of his picture, came right in front of my eyes and said, mm-hmm. it is time. Well, Bob knew about the book in the box.
Right.
And so I figured that's what he was talking about. So as soon as the memorial was over, I ran home, opened that box.
mm-hmm.
you know, when you open something that hasn't been sealed for decades, it doesn't smell very good.
Right.
Bradley had to fumigate the place. But anyway, when I finally could rummage through the material in the box, I thought to myself, mm-hmm. well, you know, this isn't half bad. I think I can do something with this. So I made my commitment to finish the manual. And and when I made my commitment, then that voice came back.
Right.
And, Manual for Developing Humans, it has a very different format, just like Future Memory did.
Mm-hmm.
The format of this book is not linear. It is fifth dimensional. You know, in the fifth dimension, all is revealed, intention rules. So you get whole packages. And the book is divided into six sections, each section divided into three parts, and to explore the conscious, subconscious, and superconscious aspect of these topics. So you get it all at once. You're not getting little piecemeal bits and pieces. You're getting the whole thing. And the purpose of the book, remember the timing, you know, Bob saying it is time. The original people to read the book says, you know, it can't come out till it's time. And the time is now, because the pressure building in our country, throughout the world, is tremendous. The pull on the earth is tremendous. Mm-hmm. It's going to highlight, it's going to increase very, very much. We're seeing it now with the eclipse. We're going to see much more in January through May of next year. We're going to see another big jump in the early part of 2019. And then between 2020 and 2024, at least in our country, we're going to, our country will be going through a Pluto return, that sort of astrological talk that says Pluto, at its position in our nation's chart, will go around its orbit. You know, it has a big orbit, like 244, 245 years. So people don't have this, but countries can. And now it's back, almost now, it is back in its place when we were born as a country. And Pluto means extreme energy. No middle. There's no middle. Extreme good, extreme not so good. And that's 2020, 2024. The actual year is 2022, right in the middle. So we're going to be going through pressures we've never done as a nation, ever. And we're getting a taste of that now, because I live in Charlottesville.
You
know, we can talk about what happened last week at Charlottesville. And I've sent out a special report on that through my website. And
would you like to give your website? Why don't you give that now?
Sure. It's www.pmhatwater.com. That's all, you know, just lowercase, one word, pmhatwater.com. So they can get on that. They want to get in the newsletter. And then that will take them to the archive of the newsletter that just came out. But then there's another piece that's just coming out today and tomorrow. It will not be in the newsletter. It will be in news services. You'll also be able to get it on my website, where I can show that the American Civil Liberties lawyers were wrong when they said that what happened here was just a protest. No, it was terrorism. And I give the particulars that show. So for
You know, I honestly think most of these attacks are terrorism. I mean,
well, this one was.
My information is that the, you know, the Fort Lauderdale attack in the airport, that guy told the FBI he was chipped by the CIA 2 weeks before that attack happened.
Yeah.
And then the congressional shooting, how can anybody fire 60 rounds at close range and not kill anybody unless he's trying to miss?
Right.
So he was probably also chipped and tortured.
Absolutely.
You know, the majority of the attacks we see anywhere are probably these.
Right. Right. And the American Civil Liberties Union has got to wake up. Because
they really
this is
do.
Not covered by our Constitution. Our Constitution covers protest. It does not cover terrorism.
Right. I think you're exactly right. And I think, you know, and you have to look beyond what was going on in the state of Florida at the time that shooting was the legislature was considering a gun control bill. So that was meant to influence that. So, you know, it really, I mean, when you put everything together, nothing is as it seems. And because the media is controlled by the dark state, they present it any way they want, you know. I mean,
absolutely. We have to look further, and really, a manual for developing humans. This is the time, because the manual shows you how to be a full human being, to be all that you are in every aspect, and it begins with thinking. And then moves
it begins
from
with
that
discernment. You know, when something doesn't feel right, and you emphasize feeling in your book a lot, it probably is not right.
Right.
So you have to go to your feeling nature. How do you feel about that incident? I mean, is that incident just made to make you feel fear and unease every time you enter an airport? Well, that's probably the purpose of it, but. If you feel that something's really off, it probably is.
Well, it's our challenge to develop our smart hearts.
It is.
Because the heart picks up what's going to happen at least 20 to 30 seconds before it does, in some cases a minute, maybe even up to 3 minutes before it happens. Our heart literally is our first responder.
That's because it's the largest field we have.
Right,
it
absolutely.
It goes out further than our brain does.
Right, and you would know that as a doctor. Our heart is our first responder. Mm-hmm. So we need to develop smart hearts.
Right.
And we're certainly shown how to do that in the manual. But it goes even further. Susan, it covers every aspect of life.
It does.
Exercise, food, children, sex. Mm-hmm. Money, terrorism, financials, God, the Messiah, all of this, because the manual has the basics.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it contains, the basics for being a human being. Now, how many of us ever learned how to be a human being? We don't learn that. We learn all kinds of things, but we don't learn how to be ourselves. You know, in ancient times, the word hu was considered the sound and tone of God. And they understood then that human meant God man, God woman.
Right.
Literally, if you are all that you are a God in the making.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not a matter of being more spiritual. That's backward thinking.
Mm-hmm.
It's a matter of being full, being all that you are. And, you know, the manual's full of that. And I'm so excited about it because, you know, it's time.
It is. It is. And the other thing that is not just in this book, but in your other book, Future Memory, all of time and space is a construct. And everything in eternity, which, you know, you read The Course in Miracles, eternity is the only reality.
Right.
And in eternity, all time and space is occurring simultaneously. So you present this in your book in various forms. The idea that, and you should tell the story about the runners, you know, where they end up at their destination before they leave. Well, I'll let you tell that story. Because
yeah,
that's a very important story.
That other space, that other...
Yeah, and most of us have experienced that. I was in a car going about 80 miles an hour when a van pulled out in front of us, and we just went through the van. Time slowed down. you know, just like you mentioned, very slow. We went through the van and we were fine.
Yeah.
Because the manipulation possible from that part of ourself in a higher realm when we're not supposed to die or when things aren't supposed to go wrong, and you have your story about cleaning up the kitchen.
The pickle syrup story.
Right, yeah. So, but the idea, I want to go back to this. The idea is that nothing real can be threatened and nothing unreal exists. And the real is with a capital R, and that is eternity.
Yeah.
That refers to eternity, who you really are. And time and space, we're projections. Our different reincarnated selves are projections into different time-space dimensions. And they can be, they're all simultaneous. So you can learn from your future self. You can learn from your past self.
Yeah.
All you have to do is go into the realm above where you are and share that information. But
well,
that's the real important
yeah.
lesson of being human, is that we're here in a construct of time and space to learn certain lessons, to learn certain things, and like you say, to learn how to be human.
You know, one of the things that I value in the manual is that it helps us to do the how of life, to get beyond inspiration, to get beyond words, to do the how, to do the doing.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things I've noticed. I'm sure you have too, and it's wonderful. It's wonderful to be inspired and to learn all these things. But you know, how do you make it real in your personal life every day?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the manual does. You know, this is a big thing that I find with the near-death experiencers. You know, I have the world's largest resource base. Research-based, nearly 4,000 adults and children.
Mm-hmm.
And I've written many books at it. I'm doing another one, by the way, another study of those people who had a near-death experience or feel that they had a near-death experience between womb and the age of five.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I'm going after the tiny ones. But
right.
I want that growing up. You know, not just the experience itself, but how they grew up and how it affected them. Because
mm-hmm.
that's the meat. That's the real important part of understanding how this all works. So if you, in looking at adults, one of the things I noticed, again and again and again, most adults will say, after they've had their near-death experience, four words, always there is life. You know, and if you
right.
really look at that, that
yeah.
means there's no before life, there's no now life, and
mm-hmm.
there is no afterlife. It
it's
means
eternity.
That we always existed, we
right.
exist now, we always will exist,
that's
because
true.
Eternity is our home.
And you know
that's
how,
what you've been saying.
Yeah, and do you know how important that is? Because basically, most human fear is then eliminated if you really understand that concept.
Yeah.
Because the fear of death is the biggest fear out there.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be. I mean, I think the fear of suffering should be the biggest fear out there. But that's
but,
just because
I'm
a doctor and I see people suffer, you know.
Yeah. But sometimes we get to intellectualizing about this.
Right, right.
And I'm really, you know, I'm really dedicated to helping people realize this in cooking, you know,
mm-hmm.
in walking, in sitting down and getting up and driving
right.
your car. In being able to balance your checkbook,
mm-hmm.
you know, I truly feel and know that we can translate this to where it's part of our daily life, and that business about fear, I'm so glad you brought that up, because I want to personalize here a little bit. Most of us sort of hop over or don't realize that most near-death experiences come from violence or trauma. So you've got a body to rebuild afterward.
Right.
You know, you're not just dealing with this incredible experience that happened to you, but you're also dealing with the body.
Right.
And there's a lot of pain.
Mm-hmm.
And I was one of those who had to relearn how to crawl, how to stand, how to walk, how to climb stairs, mm-hmm. how to run, how to tell the difference between left and right, how to see properly, hear properly, and rebuild all my belief systems. And mm-hmm. therefore, several weeks afterward, the only logical sentence I could say was, God is, because mm-hmm. I knew that was truth. And
right.
I would chant it, even by the hour.
Well, just let me interrupt you here for a minute. Let's tell the listening audience what you experienced during those three. I mean, can you describe that for them? Because I think that's very important.
Well, I don't know that I can really describe it that well, but I can be brief. My case was rape.
Mm-hmm.
So January 2, 1977, I come from Boise, Idaho. And then, you know, we're talking snow, we're talking ice. So this is January. And January 2, I had a miscarriage. And that involved a great deal of pain. I was home,
mm-hmm.
And it happened right away, very quickly. I was in the bathroom, and I very mm-hmm. quickly left my body,
mm-hmm.
and I'm up bobbing around the ceiling. And in that case, my light was the light bulb in the kitchen, or excuse me, in the bathroom, which was on. And I kept being drawn to the light like a miller. Mm-hmm. Drawn to the flame, so to speak. And I noticed that my body was a way, way, long way down, and so was the bathtub and the sink and everything else. And that confused me,
mm-hmm.
that everything was way, way down there, and I was way, way up here. And the more I thought, the more blobs there were floating around in the air,
mm-hmm.
sort of like ink blots, only they were mm-hmm. blobs. They were kind of gray and funny looking, and I didn't like them.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, there was an audible snap, and I was drawn right back into my body, entering through the top of my head, like the, you know, that soft spot mm-hmm. when you're a baby, being pulled down to my tips of my toes, and having to refit because I was much larger outside the body than inside the body.
Mm-hmm.
And I just did not understand what had happened.
Mm-hmm.
But I did understand blood everywhere. I happened
right.
to be, you know, kind of a neat mm-hmm. nick. And I looked around at all this mess, and I thought, oh, jeez. So my first thought was not to call for help. My first thought was to go to bed. And
mm-hmm.
so I crawled back to my bedroom, propped up my legs. That's the only thing I could think of, was to prop up my legs,
mm-hmm.
stuff myself with as much toweling as I could,
mm-hmm.
and I went to sleep. Now, that for me is usual. It's not unusual. I'm a cop's kid. I was raised in a police station, and they used to use the field outside my bedroom window to do their target practice.
Mm-hmm.
We lived outside of town, and I never heard a single shot. When I go to sleep,
mm-hmm.
it's like I die. You know, it's like, you
mm-hmm.
know, nothing else exists. And the same thing happened when I had children. It was my husband, who former husband then, who would hear them, and then he'd wake me up. I didn't even hear my own kids. I mean, I just really sleep. And then 2 days later, January 4, I had a major thrombosis in the right thigh vein, which dislodged,
mm-hmm.
followed by the worst case a phlebitis the specialist had ever heard of, let alone seen. And that was a very long, complex near-death experience. Again, I left my body. And then eventually was absorbed into what I came to call the void. Mm-hmm. I called it the void because it had absolutely nothing there. It's kind of a grayish, blackish, dull place. Nothing there. But yet there was a presence of everything that had ever existed, everything that exists now, everything that ever will exist was there. And I noticed that there really was something in the void. And that something was a presence of shimmer. And I would describe shimmer as best I can as you've got this jello dish and you popped it out of the mold and it's now on a plate. And you're taking your finger and you're going to touch the jello. And just before you make contact, there's a shimmer. That's what the void is filled with, is shimmer.
Mm-hmm.
And while I was in the void, that's when I had, that's when I met my loved ones who died and gone on before, including a grandfather I had never known, never could know. And he came up and introduced himself to me. That was incredible. I saw Jesus.
Did you recognize him when he
No,
did?
I didn't know what he looked like. I didn't know anything about him. He came up and introduced himself to me, and about six years later, I did some historical research, mm-hmm. finally found pictures and stories of him mm-hmm. in Kansas, and he was exactly what I saw. Same way with Jesus. Mm-hmm. The Jesus that came to me,
mm-hmm.
There is record, believe it or not, there's really record in two different museums of what Jesus looked like.
Mm-hmm.
And he was exceptionally tall mm-hmm. for that time.
Right.
He had the typical skin color of people in what we now today call the Holy Lands.
Mm-hmm.
But he was easily recognized because he had what they called hair the color of new wine.
Mm-hmm.
Some people described it as red gold. And he had unusually light-colored eyes, mm-hmm. either a light blue or gray. So his eyes, his height, and his hair mm-hmm. set him apart.
Right. Right.
And that's what I saw.
Right.
And then I got my past life review, all of this kind of thing, and my second one. My third mm-hmm. one was March 29. And that also was long and complex. And it involved leaving this world, meaning planet Earth, and mm-hmm. Going to what I really feel was that moment, that place of creation itself.
Mm-hmm.
So I was able to witness how creation works. And it was in that place that the voice spoke to me. So I had those, and then later that fall, I had three major relapses. So, I was working at the time with a blood pressure reading of 60 over 60, which means I wasn't doing too good. And it was, I just didn't get well, couldn't get well. I took myself out of the care of an allopath, which is our typical doctors, and put myself into the care of a naturopath, which, is more of a natural doctor, using natural techniques. But I didn't know anything at all about a healing crisis. Nobody told me that, and nor did my doctor. And I had a healing crisis, and it was the worst he'd ever seen. And he had a really tough time with me, and I had a rough time with me as well. trying to come back. And that's when I was in these classes day and night, how to relearn all this stuff. And I just wasn't getting well at all until some friends of mine decided that I needed a change of scenery. So they decided really early in the morning, like 5 in the morning. Can you imagine a doctor getting up that early? But he did. And gave me a shot and lots of medication, and my friends took me up to Seattle, Washington, where the Mind Miraculous Symposium was being held at Seattle Center. Mm-hmm. And all the greats were there. Dr. Bruce Joy, Uri Geller, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, Dr. William Tiller. And it was Tiller who was the first speaker that paid for my way up there. His topic was called The Eternal Now. Mm-hmm. And I can't really tell you much about what he had to say, except the very last part. He felt that the eternal now could be charted, that we could understand the eternal now mathematically. So he flipped up on this huge, giant screen. If you've ever been to Seattle Center, you'll know what I'm talking about. And it was the exact same thing I saw in my third near-death experience. Mm-hmm. And I jumped up from my seat, I ran out into the foyer, and I collapsed against a wall underneath a foyer light. And I rocked back and forth, I'm in the fetal position, and I'm saying, I'm not crazy, I'm not crazy. He saw it too. I'm not crazy, I'm not crazy. And it was at that moment that I realized that everything that had happened to me was real. It was 100% real. And that I was okay. And it was that moment on that I began to get well. Mm-hmm. And then the next year, I walked out on my life. I quit my job at the bank on the very day that I was to get a major promotion. And in those days, that was a big deal. I mean, for a woman to get a major promotion at a bank, you got to be kidding. Yeah. But yes. And I went to my boss. I worked in the analytical department. Mm-hmm. And yes, I was an analyst. And I went up to my boss, and I told her, I'm quitting. I am going to chase rainbows. And I'll never forget this. My boss, who's a very stiff, 100% bank analyst, sat me down and said, now, don't say another word. And so she said to me at 4 o'clock that morning, she had had a vision, not a dream, a vision, where she had gone to her boss and told her boss that she would have to replace me, that I was going to chase rainbows.
Really?
And all I could do was pound her table and say, that's not fair. You knew about it before I did.
Yeah.
And so I did. I walked out on my life, sold everything or gave it away or stored everything I owned, left in my little Ford Pinto that I had at the time, and crisscrossed the United States, fulfilling all my childhood dreams and wishes, wound up in Washington, D.C., where I knew that I was to live and to be, and began my research. So that's my kind of my story. I'm saying kind of because after that, about a year later, I came to work for a telephone company that were computerizing everything before the investiture, and so they flew me all over the eastern half of the United States, that is to say from the Mississippi River to the Atlantic Ocean. They flew me all over everywhere to work on these systems. And wherever I was, I found near-death experiencers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was bizarre, Susan. It was bizarre. Let me give you an example of how bizarre. I was working a job up in Minneapolis. Just got off the airplane, you know, and I'm in a cab going to the job site. And I'm just so curious. So I'm asking the guy, you know, what is the industry here? What's the taxes? What's the, you know, I'm asking him all these questions about the city.
Mm-hmm.
And he finally looked at me and says, lady, says, I come from Egypt. I'm just here to go to school. He says, I don't know anything about this city either. But I know about the time I died. Let me tell you
my
story. And he did. And it was like that.
Yeah.
Everywhere I went.
They were sent to you.
Well,
because they had a story to tell and you were going to listen.
Like this one place, I was working a job in Macon, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a coffee break, so I'm going to a nearby restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sitting on a table in the middle. There wasn't hardly anybody there. It's just me. I'm reading a paperback.
Mm-hmm.
And up walks this guy, almost as wide as he is tall. And
mm-hmm.
and he asked me if anybody was sitting on that chair opposite me on my little table. And I said, no. He said, well, can I sit there? And I thought for a minute, and okay. So he sits down,
mm-hmm.
and he's real serious. He puts both of his arms on the table, looks at me right in the eye, and he says, I want you to know, I still drink, I still chase women,
mm-hmm.
but I want you to know all about the time I died.
Right.
And so he goes,
that's great.
You know,
huh?
I mean, year after year after year of that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what built my base.
Yeah. I have a quick story to tell you. You know, I covered 6 emergency rooms all at once, which was really fun. Sometimes all at once on the same night, which made it very complicated if there was multiple car accidents. But I got called down to DeKalb Medical, which was a level 3 trauma center, and I heard as I was pulling out of my driveway that the patient was going to die. And I said, well, do you want me to go anyway? And they said, yeah. So I said, okay. So I went down, and the patient was a pedestrian MVA, in other words, a man hit by a car, which can be quite, you know, traumatic.
Yeah.
And he had kind of, his leg was half off, and he had all these rib fractures. I mean, there was just all these, I kind of had to know about his injuries because facial trauma was part of it. And so I'm sitting in the corner just looking over his chart and looking over everything and seeing if I was going to get a chance to ever repair his facial lacerations, kind of thinking I might not. And I noticed he was up near the ceiling. And so we start talking, and he goes, what do you think? I go, well, you got a lot of injuries here. You know, I'm not saying out loud. I'm just telethon with him.
Right.
And he said, and we have this long conversation, and he says, well, do you think I can come back in? He said, they're giving me a choice. I said, well, he said, well, and then he asked me a bunch of questions. You know, how long would it take to recover? Da, da, da. You know, just all sorts of stuff. I gave him my best estimate on everything. And he said, well, he said, I think I'm going to go. And when he went, then he flatlined.
Aw, bless his
so,
heart.
So they had me go in just to have him a little conversation with him before he, you know, because I guess he did have a choice, although it was going to be a really hard recovery, and he probably would have lost his leg at a high level. You know, just, and I guess he just didn't think that that was a good deal.
Yeah.
And so sometimes you do have a choice, and sometimes you get to discuss it with a doctor in the ER.
Well, I just wish more and more doctors were open.
Well,
to this.
Not a lot of doctors have the perceptual, I guess, tools that I was born with, but they certainly could develop them, as you know. I mean, you have
well,
things
more
in your
are.
Book about developing
yeah.
those skills. You can develop them.
Oh, absolutely, and the book is full of that too.
It is.
And you know, I want to bring us back to that.
Mm-hmm.
A Manual for Developing Humans is the most important book I have ever written. And I want to emphasize that again and again and again. Please get it on Facebook. Please get it in your own, everybody, get it in your own news groups or party groups, whatever. Tell everybody, because what we're facing now and what we're going to face, if we give people instructions on how to handle it, that's nuts. You give people, mm-hmm. you know, where to put your money, how right. to handle your house. That's all absolutely nuts, because it's going to change. What right. will not change is know thyself. That's yep. exactly what the manual does. It helps mm-hmm. you to know yourself, love yourself. It is an invitation for you to think for yourself
mm-hmm.
and to take
and
control of your life.
Guidance from a higher level than what anybody in this level knows.
You're right.
See, Yogi Bhajan, you probably remember Yogi Bhajan. He's passed on, but he
yeah,
made predictions about the time that we were in. He was a master. He said, anybody not connected to their soul in this time would kind of go crazy. Very interesting, given
which
what's
is
going
absolutely
on in the
true.
World.
Exactly what's happening.
On. But so what your book does, and this is what I really want the listeners to understand, what your book does is strengthen that connection to who you really are. And as you strengthen that connection, then everything else in life takes care of itself.
Right. And strengthening that connection through little everyday things, too. Because I think this is just so important.
Yeah, it is right now. I mean,
yeah,
it is right now more than ever. More
yeah,
than
when
ever,
we're talking about
said.
Exercise, for instance, exercising yeah. your body. Also, mm-hmm. exercise your face. So there's,
right.
you know, there's acupressure facelifts in there,
mm-hmm.
too. I mean, I really want to emphasize that this is everyday things. It is larger things. It is all kinds of things that is done in simple instructions,
mm-hmm.
some of it really funny, some of it really interesting. Everything you need, all the basic facts you need to know yourself is in the manual.
So give your contact information one more time so they can... They can.
Well, I also write a free monthly newsletter, so they can sign
okay.
up. It's www.pmhatwater.com. They can get A Manual for Developing Humans through any book source.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Amazon.com, Barnes and Noble. You know, you can go to any book source and order it if they don't have it on their shelf. It's readily available, and get several of them and give them away. You know, one of the things that amazes me about the feedback I've been getting, I had one therapist who got a hold of me, and he had read the manual, and said he is now using the techniques in the manual in his practice. This is
mm-hmm.
better than what I have been using. Had another fellow, an older fellow, who's living in New York City, takes a lot of daily walks, and uses the finger positions that are taught in the manual. You know, just the way you use your fingers can control
mm-hmm.
or expand, help, aid the way your energy and the way you walk. The kind of energy that you have. He says, I can now walk block after block after a block. He says, I have no fear. I'm in complete
mm-hmm.
peace, and I never
mm-hmm.
tire. And it's just the way he uses his fingers.
Right.
So when I say the manual has a lot of easy stuff in it. It does. Powerful stuff in it. It does. And lots of stories.
Well, tell the story about the runner, because that's interesting. An interesting concept of time.
Well, I don't know that I can remember all of the details that are in the book, but it has to do with Indian runners. And, mm-hmm. of course, that's part of their culture. They grow up that way, and those are selected when they're older, who can really do it. And that is to say, they put themselves in a certain mind state, and they start running. Running in the sense that they're delivering messages. So you give a specific Indian runner a very important message that's to be delivered at such a time and such a place. And, of course, that's always way far away, like miles and many, many miles away. And the Indian runner can get there long before a horse, a person on horseback can. In fact, they can get there before they left. And they had some researchers one time following some of these guys who were out there doing the running.
Right.
And they found with their footprints that they got less and less deep in the sand and dirt, and pretty soon they disappeared.
Right. They went through a portal.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, well, we're going to learn a lot more about portals when disclosure happens.
Yeah.
A lot more. Because portals have been around and been used by a lot of humans for a long time. So, but
well,
it's
some
secret
of the
right
newest
now.
Science research. You have to get in the newsletter and go back maybe 3 months. But some of the science that's out there now is so exciting. For instance, they have discovered last year, that time is not an interval, is not just an interval between things. It is actually a form of matter. Time is actually a form of matter. And you can take time matter and turn it into or create time crystals where you can store information quantumly. You can take quantum information and store it in a quantum crystal that will last forever. And they did their first time crystal this year, and they are doing it, preparing for our quantum computers, a way of handling the information in quantum time, and in doing that, they discovered that time is actually a form of matter. It is not just an interval between. Scientific discovery that was made this year about the brain and studying the brain. We talk about 3D reality. Wrong! The brain can handle effectively and efficiently in 7 dimensions, not just 3. In fact, the brain can also handle 11 dimensions and work in those dimensions in the earth plane in everyday physical reality. It is not a 3D world we live in. It is at least a 7D, and for many, an 11D world.
And you know that the information is that at the time of the beginning of the universe, there were actually 27 dimensions, but they collapsed down into 11.
Yeah, and they found just recently.
So 11 is the most that we're probably able to do right now, because we're currently, we're currently in that, whatever you would say, that multidimensional reality of 11 dimensions.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, I just find this so exciting. You know, all this stuff that we know spiritually or transpersonally or however you want to call it is now being verified by science. So it's not a matter of how you pray or what you believe. Now we know it is physical reality.
Well, we're entering a time where the very essence of where we are is becoming multidimensional. So,
yeah.
You know, it's I mean, it that's what ascension is.
Yeah, and we're there.
Yeah.
We're doing it.
We're undergoing, we're in it, so to speak.
Yeah, we're in it.
We're not looking forward to it like Jesus talked about. We are actually in it.
Well, you know, we're in the time of the overlap.
Right.
We know we're in the great shifting, which occurs once every
25,920
years.
Right.
But we're also in an overlap because the age of Pisces has not left. The age of Aquarius is here. So the two are piggyback. They're one on top of the other.
Yep.
So that increases the energy many, many fold. It also increases, you know, people getting really angry or they can't cope or how do you handle this? And
you talk about karma, too. And karma is speeding up now, too.
Yeah,
karma is like 30 times to 40 times more fast than it was, you know, probably when you and I were born.
Right.
Interesting, huh?
Right. And what helps us, I love the Japanese, they call it tree bathing. That is to say, go out into a forest, sit down, and just be. And let the trees do the work. And they do. Let's turn to each other, certainly, in loving or at least understanding ways, but let's turn also to nature, because it's here, it's ever ready to help, and let's use it.
Well, right now, the majority of people out there would really benefit from being and regaining energy and regaining the ability to stay centered and have proper discernment and just manage their own energy, because with what's going on energetically, they're being torn apart. Especially if they don't have the skills to do basic spiritual practices, even if it's just going to play golf.
Let's just use the simple stuff.
Right.
You know, I think it's in the manual. I'm pretty sure it is. If you're at a moment where you can't think straight, you can't make a decision, or you're worried about a decision, or there's a lot of stress or pressure on you, stop.
Right.
Just stop. Put your arms down. Let them hang. Look straight ahead and take a deep breath, hold it for a little bit, then let it go, swallow, and then proceed. That swallowing helps to untangle the synapse in the brain. So you stop, you just stop everything. You take a deep breath, you know, hold on to it for a little second or two, then let it go slowly, then swallow. Then go ahead and make a decision or do what you want to do. And that will change everything.
Right.
Just that simple.
Yep.
So when I'm talking simple, I mean it.
Mm-hmm.
We are made to handle whatever the world can throw at us. We are all made to handle that. We just don't know that we are.
Right. Well, we have a higher guidance system that actually is outside of space and time, can give us great information, but we have to access it. You know, we have to stop the fear, stop the anxiety, stop the negative things that keep us from that realm. Well, it is part of us, so it's really just a matter of being able to bring it in.
Yeah.
Well, we're coming up on the end of our hour.
Well,
we are. Time flies.
Yeah, it does when you're having fun. Of course.
Yeah.
Remind everybody again, a manual for developing humans that gives you all the basic facts on how to be the godling you are.
Great. Well, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you, Susan. And thank you for
it's
your stories,
fun.
Too. Very helpful.
Great. Next week, we'll be interviewing Dr. David Lowe, Lucid Dreaming and Alternative Realities. That's another way to access these realms is through the dream state. Please join us next week for Temple of Health radio show.